Welcome to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
And we're back with another episode of the Pop Culture Cosmos. It's Gerald Glassford coming up back at you here from Pop Culture Cosmos, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, Game Source, and of course the Lakers Fast Break. We truly appreciate everyone being out there for all of our great shows. And if you can, please give us that 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, if you could like, share, and subscribe, follow, or do whatever it is that you can to support us right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos, Game Source, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, where we've got an episode coming up this week on the NFL Draft, plus also as well, of course, the Lakers Fast Break, where we cover the NBA news and notes and the Lakers, however long they stay in the playoffs. So go ahead and check out all those great shows. And if you can, it is sincerely appreciated. But it wouldn't be a Pop Culture Cosmos number 400 without a good man. Indeed, he is the mastermind behind HappyHoarderCollectibles.com. Plus, also check out wherever he is at, which con he will be at each and every weekend right there for you at the Happy Hoarder. It is my good friend indeed. It is Josh the Great Peterson. Josh, 400, man. 400 down. And hopefully 400 to go, my friend.
Yeah, is that counting like multiverse episodes too?
No, that's just 400 of you and I.
So to think, man, like we were doing the multiverse originally too. And like that's together, you and I have probably done over 1,000 podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. It's quite a few.
Quite a few indeed. Actually, I've totaled myself out to over 2,000 with all my other shows and whatnot. So yeah, definitely a lot to deal with there, but great to have you aboard, my friend, for all these years, 2016 and going strong each and every week. And I'm hoping it will continue covering the world of pop culture as only we can. A lot to talk about on this week's show. Obviously, we have a new champion of the box office, Challengers. And we'll talk about the fervor over that and whether or not this movie will get some love later on this year. We'll talk about that coming up as well. Plus, 5 years of Avengers Endgame as far as a anniversary is concerned. So we talk about the resonance of that and will Marvel be able to maybe come even close to matching that fervor, the excitement, the hysteria surrounding Avengers Endgame. That's coming up on the show. Plus, Josh and I will predict for May what will happen with no Marvel movie there. What will happen in the month of May? That starts coming up here in just a few days. We'll go ahead and talk about that on the show as well. But first, my friend, I do want to give a big shout out to Challengers, which did garner pretty much as expected to right around $15 million at the domestic box office. Worldwide, it's going to do a little bit more than that. But I think what it did is really cement Zendaya as a leading lady at the box office or leading lady in Hollywood films, because not just because this movie is going to make a lot of money, because it's not. Let's just put it that way. But the fact that this movie may be considered for Oscar consideration, or at the very least, my friend, it will be on a lot of top 10 critics' lists. I think that's the key, my friend. This movie may be rerun, or you know, even if it goes to digital or regular TV, it will probably get a run later in the year just to remind everybody about how much beloved it is by the critics. You will see this movie on a lot of top 10 lists. And Zendaya is one of the main reasons why, my friend. So your thoughts on Challengers. Again, it does have the risky three-way romance, and there's the love scene that everybody was talking about that they showcased in the trailers, which, again, it's Hollywood. It's an R-rated movie, but it doesn't go overboard on it. So it's really not as risque as, you know, they're making it out to be. But again, I know a lot of people were like saying, stay away from this movie because of that scene. It's like, come on, give me a break. We're all adults here. If you're adult, if you want to see that, it's all right. It's more about the movie. It's more about the performances. That should be the focus, because this movie may be forgotten about by the time the year is done. But then again, the way it's being thought about as a critical nature, and at 88 Metacritic score, Josh, one of the highest of the year, it may be remembered as one of the best movies of 2024.
You know, all I'm thinking about right here is how awkward, like, holidays would be, like family holidays, like if both brothers go to Christmas dinner with the same girl.
Okay.
Like, I'm curious how the mom and dad feel about that, you know, or when Zendaya goes home and has brothers with her, like, what's the conversation that revolves around that?
I don't know, but I'm sure it's pretty awkward. But these are, you know,
I know the
two tennis pros, you know, battling with you know, for the heart and soul of the, you know, the young lady, Zendaya, the female tennis pro in this mix. But, you know, even as her career gets derailed due to a knee injury, she's, you know, trying to come back, but she's still the one in control as far as this relationship is concerned, for lack of a better term. You know, I've heard what critics say is about this relationship, this three-way relationship, is that why the movie works so well on that level is because when you get right down to it, they're better off without each other and they're better off with each other all at the same time. And if you can create that dynamic, if you can create that kind of chemistry, for lack of a better term, I think that makes for a good, I guess adult movie concept that maybe some people will be able to check out and appreciate later on this year when it hits streaming and all that good stuff. And maybe you'll get remembered later on, or at least maybe Zendaya's performance will get remembered if the movie doesn't.
Yeah. So I get where this whole thing would be a great story. It's not my type of movie, so I'm probably not going
to
watch it.
No, that's a hard genre to make exciting for a majority of people as far as tennis movies concerned.
Yeah. And that's probably why they, you know, added in the three-way, the love triangle element to it. But yeah, I mean, I like Zendaya. You know, I think she's a brilliant actress, and I am, you know, fervently support anything she does. I just probably won't watch this one.
But again, she did an outstanding job here. She's done an outstanding job in Dune Part 2, which I got a chance to finally see in IMAX, and I was so thrilled to go ahead and see it. It is definitely worth watching. I know it's in its final days on IMAX, so if you are near an IMAX that has Dune Part 2, I still highly recommend it, as it reached, congratulations, $700 million worldwide at the box office. So definitely looking forward to seeing
that $1 billion mark. Yeah.
No, it's not really generating any more, Josh, outside of just what a trickle. So I have a feeling it's going to be right where it is, right around 700, I think.
Yeah. Here's what I think they should do. Hand over the marketing department to James Cameron, and they're just going to re-release it twice a year until Dune 3 comes out. And then I think it'll slowly get to that $1 billion mark, because they're like, you know, you don't want to see Dune again, but it's the only thing playing in theaters. And, all right, I'll go.
It's a really good, these are two really good films, really great films. And I hope people get a chance to get into it. I know that for whatever reason, the Dune series has not been everybody's cup of tea, but I think that it just shows you, when you create a smarter, or in this case, adapt a smarter, higher brow sci-fi picture, it has a ceiling. It has a ceiling on how far it can go. And I think we're finding that out, that I'm not sure if $1 billion could ever be it. It's like Star Trek. Star Trek as a movie, no matter how well you make it, like Star Trek, you know, we always go back and forth, Melinda and I, on 2008 Star Trek and how good it was. Yet it only goes so high. It only goes $500 million tops at the box office worldwide. There's only a certain limit to how far certain type of genres can go. Sci-fi, like Star Wars, which is more fantasy, but it's not getting into the making you think politics, religion, to the extent that Dune does, or doesn't hit you with a whole bunch of heavy stuff like Dune does. And yeah, it just, it's, you could see where there's a limitation to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And it, yeah, you know, you're right. It does appeal to an audience of higher intelligence, but you know, I think there are elements like I showed my kids, you know, we watch both Dune movies, and there are elements of it to where, like, if you're just a general audience, a popcorn eater, like, you can go and enjoy these movies, but you know, they're going to be obviously something that you're going to miss a lot of the content on it, the inner layers of content until, you know, you're older. It's like reading Frankenstein, right? When you're in high school, you read Frankenstein, you're like, oh, this means nothing to me. But then when you have to read again in college, when you've had, you know, more experience with critical thinking, you're like, oh, there's all this stuff in there now that suddenly makes sense.
That's true. I mean, when Alien, the re-release of that, almost charted on the top 10, that tells you right there how funny that is. So yeah, absolutely. It's something where, again, we're in a situation where I think we're in a standstill where we're waiting for whatever's coming up here in the not too distant future. But I do want to go ahead and give a shout out to Challengers for being a film that, while monetarily it will not make anything worth of real note. I mean, maybe it'll get $30 million, $60 million worldwide at the box office is best. I think what it comes down to is if it will be forgotten about by the end of the year, or if it won't be. I'm not sure if it will. I'm sure they'll probably do a re-release in films just for the Oscar voters, which is what I think they will do, because it is one of the highest rated movies of the year. But as far as what it did, again, it earned enough to probably make a pass, or at least deserve its chance to be out there in theaters, as opposed to just being sent straight to streaming. I know that was talk for that movie, as far as, why don't you just send it straight to streaming? Why don't you just send it straight to Netflix? And you know what? I guess it earned enough to justify its performance out there at the box office.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I mean, and even whether or not people watch it or not, like, it's still, it's good that it's out there, because we don't have a lot of variety of stuff in the theaters, you know, to begin with. So it's nice to have something else out there to maybe encourage somebody else to be like, oh, hey, well, that type of film did well here, so maybe my film will do well in a theatrical run too, which will, you know, we do want content on our streaming services, but also it would be nice to go back to the movies to watch something that's not, you know, geared towards superheroes or robots or lizards fighting gorillas.
There you go. Absolutely. But also, right now, we're in a little bit of a flux in this week, with a lot of shows ended their run halfway through the month. I know that a lot of people are looking forward to something else on the horizon. So it was nice to get in this middle here, something that maybe, you know, gets the spotlight even just a little bit, like Challengers. And who knows? Again, I think that there's a good possibility, if not the movie, even though it's really highly rated, I think Zendaya's performance may get a lot of steam. And if the studio wants to go ahead and make sure that she is remembered, her performance is remembered at the end of this year, I think they will go ahead and hit you upside the head with that, or at least hit the voters upside the head with that come December, when they probably re-release this movie for a couple of weeks, just to refresh in everybody's mind exactly how high it was rated.
I'm sure they will. And like you said, I think it's ripe for award nominations. So that would be, you know, that'll probably give people a reason to watch it too.
That's true. So what are your thoughts out there on Challengers winning the box office and the risky three-way scene and the love triangle that it is? Did you go ahead and go through the risks and check it out anyways? Or were you put off by that, or just tennis setting and all that? But did you really go out and check out Challengers? If you did, please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. Well, my friend, speaking of the box office, I wanted to go ahead and ask you your thoughts, because we come up on an anniversary Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. Avengers Endgame is 5 years old this week. So I remember where we were at. I remember the emotions. I remember the tears, the cheers, the jeers, everything involved in watching it as an experience. I think it is the last event in pop culture that we have had. I think obviously the pandemic had something to do to derail a lot of this, but I think that 5 years ago, with all respect to James Cameron, Avatar 2, yeah, I understand how many money it made, but still, I don't think that was an event to me. I think Avengers Endgame, the culmination of 20 plus films in creating this, and after Infinity War, set the tone literally for this film. I thought that absolutely it was an event in and of itself. So tell me, now that we've had 5 years of distance now between it, ironically, the same amount of time in the film, 5 years later, your thoughts, my friend, on the lasting effects and the cultural footprint, as my good friend Mr. Rob McCallum would say, of Avengers Endgame.
It's funny because I remember it was me and Big Dog and Chad went out to your neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did that thing for Retro City Games, and then we went and saw Avengers, and then I think it was later that evening, right, that we all went over to your place and mm-hmm. we did a podcast. Who else was there? Was it just us or was Jamie there? I don't remember.
Jamie was there. Yep. Yeah. You can still hear it out. It's on our, it actually does get hits every now and then.
Was so much fun, man. Like, I remember that weekend. Was that the same weekend we did the Level Up Expo?
Mm-hmm.
That was an action-packed weekend. But yeah, that was great. 'Cause then, yeah, we went to Level Up Expo and we were able to talk about the movie. And yeah, we had a whole panel, like all of us were there, Jamie and Tony and yep. Who else? Yeah. There's a couple other people there, I think. But
yeah,
that was a really, really fun weekend. Anyways, yeah, I don't know, man. So I was reading articles about this. It didn't even dawn on me that this had happened 5 years ago. And like, who would have thought
five
back then?
Years later.
Right. Who would have thought back then that we were on the precipice of having this massive worldwide event happen that was going to basically shut us all in our homes for almost a year and keep us from going to the movie theaters and enjoying doing things like that. So it's all like really shocking if you think about it, but the movie itself, like, I don't know, like you ask, like this idea that there could one day be another movie like that, I don't think that will ever happen. Like, I think Marvel's been trying to repeat that formula and it's just not doing it because the bar has already been set so high and they keep falling short of it. It's like trying to I don't know, it's like you do something amazing and then you're trying to constantly reach that level of being amazing, you just can't do it, and you start to get in your head, and the more you try, the worse it gets. It wasn't just a movie though. It was an event. Like Dune, I would say is an event, right? It's not Dune 3. Dune 2 was a movie. Dune 1 was a movie. Dune 3, like the culmination, the ending of it could possibly be an event.
It's going to be hard because it just does not have the kind of fan support that you need behind it. I mean, right. From you and I, we've seen it from a critical level and we absolutely love it and appreciate it for what it is, but it just does not have, in my opinion, enough of an audience to, I mean, it will do well. Dune Messiah will do well. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it will not be the event that you and I think it deserves. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, cause then Dune's not a series for kids. Like the great thing about the MCU, despite some of the colorful language in it, it still was geared towards families, right? Families went out and enjoyed these movies. So that contributed to ticket sales. And then
I mean, and I said Avatar, The Way of Water, that was a movie, but I don't feel like that was an event.
No, no, neither was the first Avatar, though. That was just a movie that got a lot of critical appeal. Like, I mean, I would go as far to say that
I would say the original Avatar became something even I had to go see at the theaters, you know, and whatnot, just to experience it once. And a lot of people did treat it like an event because it was out in the theaters for so long. The Way of Water, again, $2.3 billion. But to me, it just seemed like a really, really successful movie as opposed to being an event. I think Avatar became an event because of just it steamrolled into that worldwide, but it didn't sustain itself as a pop culture, icon because of the fact that it's so weird, like I said, because as soon as Avatar goes away, nobody cares about Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as Avatar comes back around, everybody wants to go see Avatar. It's just so weird how it is. I mean, Star Wars, there's always people dressing up or being or fantasizing about Star Wars. There's always something to talk about in Star Wars. Talk about Marvel. There's always something to talk about Marvel. Avatar, it just shows up and then goes away. It just shows up and then goes away.
it's like a holiday.
Yes.
So I look at Endgame, though, it's different. It's a different beast altogether, though, because you look at there all these different movies came out. You had Iron Man, Thor, Captain America. Within that cluster of superheroes, there was something in there for everybody. And then they had the, you know, even like Captain Marvel, Black Panther. Sorry, I left out quite a few heroes. But within that cluster of heroes, that universe, there was something that appealed to different types of audiences. Like I look at it like how, you know, when I was in high school, there's all these different like emo and screamo bands and people would go to see them in the concerts like, yeah, this is really speaking to me. But the place where all these different fans could get together was Warped Tour. And that was an event right there. And so it's the same thing with these superhero movies like Iron Man, Thor, Black Panther, Captain America. All the fans of these different heroes were able to come together for this culmination of all these years of hard work. And that was the result. That was what the result was in game. And I think that's what makes it an event to me.
Mm-hmm. I guess, and I think that's very astute in the way you set that up. I agree with you. I think that that's something again with Avengers Endgame, this had hype to it. This had structure to it. This had 20 plus films building you up to this climactic point. Everybody, even if you hadn't seen all of them, you felt like you'd done enough work in watching some of these films or all of these films. Like you talk about yourself, you know, like your OCD as far as your completionist and whatnot. Once you get into something, you have to complete it. Well, again, going to Avengers Endgame, it felt like, okay, I watched all this stuff. I earned my keep. I paid my dues. I got to go ahead and get the payoff now with Avengers Endgame. It's just something that has to be done. Now, mind you, it's not the best Marvel movie, but it's good enough. It's actually very good enough to stand as one of the best Marvel movies. That's the way you want to go out. It, you know, of course, it's not the best Marvel movie, but hey, it would have been great if it's that. But hey, it's good enough to be at that level where they closed it off real nicely and the exact ending that you wanted with the climactic battle between the forces of Thanos and the Avengers all coming together, assembling for that last 20-30 minutes. And then, of course, the death of Iron Man. Spoilers! So I just, yeah, again, it's just, I know you don't know by now, but I just think that again, it met our expectations. It didn't exceed them, but it met them. And that's what matters.
Yes. I mean, I would make a case for saying that it did exceed some expectations, you know, because a lot of people weren't quite sure what to think of all this. And then,
yeah, I guess so. We thought they would blow. We thought they would Game of Thrones do it. Yeah.
I mean, I think that they completely blew Game of Thrones, anything Game of Thrones could ever do, out of the water with this movie.
Well, I meant last episode type.
Oh,
thing. Yeah. You know, just like, you know, we're going to finish this off and we're not going to throw a clunker at it. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, it's the perfect setup for a kickoff. And then you end up spraining your ankle on the,
exactly. A Shogun. Shogun, I was just talking about that last week, 9 fantastic episodes, and they didn't stick the landing with the 10th. And there you go.
Yeah, you know, I was curious about, I don't know, like a lot of people were applauding Shogun for being a show, you know, we'll get back to Avengers in a second, but they're applauding it for being a show about war that didn't actually like show.
Didn't have war.
Yeah, so I was wondering if that was like all part of it. They're like, how do we end this without having to show an epic battle?
And
like,
well, the thing though is kind of bait and switch the way they set it up in the trailers preceding the series. So, you know, they kind of hinted that that would be a thing as far as a war between houses, between clans, between lords. And unfortunately, that never materialized. Spoilers! So... be that as it may, but with Avengers Endgame, my friend, you know, getting back to you on that, I really think that we just do not. That's a good question, Alan. My answer was on Friday. I said going into it, Shogun was a tiny bit better than Tokyo Vice episode season 2, but all it took was one episode to turn it around. So I'm gonna lean Tokyo Vice season 2 by a nose.
I want to talk about something for a minute. I know we keep rabbit holing here, but I am having a huge issue with last episodes of seasons or shows. Mm-hmm. It's bothering me because I finished Fallout, and I guess the same thing with like Shogun. We talk about a 3-body problem. You get to these episodes and either they don't know how to end what they've started or they're setting up for another season. So it makes it feel like everything that led up to that feels like a waste of time because you don't get the satisfaction because they want you to watch more or they don't know how to end what they're doing. So
I will tell you this, Tokyo Vice season 2, because it doesn't know its fate yet. It hasn't been canceled yet. But I think they kind of know what is going on. So what they did was they covered their bases. They finished the 2-season story arc. They completely finished it, but left a small door open in case Max says they want to renew it. So I think they probably did as best as possible during the circumstances. And to Alan's question, I think ultimately in the end, that's why I'm giving Tokyo Vice the nod over Shogun, because they stuck the landing as best they could, better than what Shogun did.
Yeah. Okay. So do you think that that's because the producers and writers were aware that the show was about to end or that it could end? Do you think a lot of these showrunners don't pay attention to the ratings of like the last season? Cause even looking at The Witcher right now, they're like, oh, we're going to end things with season 5. You know, because they see the ratings slowly declining. But do you feel like
saw, you know, who kind of check on out as far as Henry Cavill's concerned, too? Pretty much do the math on that one. Henry Cavill to Liam Hemsworth, although Henry Cavill as a leading man lately hasn't been money, that's for sure. But as with, you know, the last 2 films he's done this year. But again, it just comes down to it. I think, like you said, they saw the tea leaves and The Witcher should close everything out by season 5, which they're actually filming back to back with season 4. But when it comes down to it, Tokyo Vice, you're right. They knew they weren't strong in season 1 with their ratings, no matter how critically hailed it was. And going in, it wasn't heavily promoted at all. Remember, I told you, I was even surprised it was out. I didn't even know, and I'm a fan of the show, and I didn't even know it was out for season 2. And I was so incensed that they did such a piss poor job of promoting it because it is so good and they completed it so well. And season 2 is actually, in a rarity, Josh, better than season 1, which was good in and of itself. I put it on my top of the pop culture list the year that it came out. So yeah, it was really disappointing how they finished that off. But Tokyo Vice season 2 is a must watch. Shogun, for the first 9 episodes, is a must watch. You got to finish it off. Episode 10. Go ahead from there. But
you're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos. What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
But my friend, when you're talking about that type of material, it's absolutely understood that you've got to go ahead and stick the landing. And I don't think, like you said, showrunners realize or have a full grasp of the knowledge of when they do or they don't all the time.
Yeah, it's almost like you gotta count your blessings and know when to quit or know when to be prepared to quit.
So once again, it is the Pop Culture Cosmos. It is Josh the Great Peterson from HappyHoarderCollectibles.com and the Happy Hoarder Collectibles world, along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching and listening. We're talking Avengers Endgame right now, 5 years later. And I want to ask you this, Josh, again, we'll close out the conversation with Avengers Endgame. We'll get back into it because I know we went down a deep rabbit hole, but I want to ask you this. When it comes down to Avengers Endgame, the cultural resonance of this, we're heading up upon the first week of May, which traditionally, normally, would be the Marvel movie of the year, at least the biggest projected Marvel movie of the year. And that's not the case this time around. It's going to be The Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling as the big picture that comes out next week. I want to hear your thoughts on that here in a sec, but when it comes down to it, your thoughts on Avengers Endgame and if Marvel will ever come close to that kind of success in creating an event like that again.
I hate to sound pessimistic here, but I don't think they will. Like, I think they're trying so hard, and what they end up producing with Secret Wars and that, I could be wrong. You know, I could 2-3 years from now I could eat a shoe, but I think that what they put out there is could be great, but I don't think that it'll ever allow people to relive that feeling that you got from watching Endgame, from seeing all these heroes assemble on screen, and just that it wasn't just something you watched, it was something you felt. Like, you felt it, like, in your very being, like, the excitement was just, it was resonating in there, and I don't think that that's going to happen. Like, even with the inclusion of the X-Men or whatever happens with Deadpool, I just don't see it happening again.
I hope you're wrong, but
I hope so too.
Right. I think you're right. I think that getting close to that success would be a success if Secret Wars or the Kang Dynasty Avengers movies will actually even come close to that. So I'm hopeful of that, but we'll see. But I'm not too optimistic on it. I would say the chances are less than 50-50 it will ever approach that type of deal. Although, again, if they come close to it, if they build movies again that make $700, $800, $900 million, $1 billion, $1.5 billion successful box office movies, then I think that's a win for Marvel. They have brought back some of that audience because they're not doing it now. They're not making that kind of money outside of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. They've not come close to making that type of money as of late. They've not come close to garnering those type of ratings on Disney Plus as of late. Even Loki Season 2 did not. I mean, it did a pretty good, but it didn't do quite as well as I think a lot of people were hoping for. I think Secret Invasion left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths. Moon Knight exactly didn't thrill the world there as well. Echo, that came out. What If, they did not come out to great fanfare as well. So if the Marvel movies coming up come anywhere close to replicating what we saw with Avengers Endgame 5 years ago, I think that's a big win for Kevin Feige to say that, you know what, I was able to go ahead and reignite the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, I mean, and it also goes back to the big question of, like, franchise fatigue, not just with Marvel, but are people just tired of these big franchises in general? I mean, we're still seeing stuff like, obviously, Godzilla versus King Kong did, you know, a lot in the box office, but we're getting to that point, though, where there's so many of them. So it's, again, with that feeling, like, it's going to be dulled a little bit compared to what it once was when these movies come out.
But we'll keep talking about it always here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But we want to hear your thoughts about your memories of Avengers Endgame. And is it something that still resonates with you 5 years later? Please let us know your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. But there are some movies coming out here in the not too distant future. I wanted to ask your opinions on it. I know I will go into deeper detail here in a couple weeks with my good friend, Mrs. Melinda Barkhouse Ross, coming up here as far as some of the movies of the summer in a couple weeks. But I wanted to hear your thoughts on the movies of May, starting with The Fall Guy and Ryan Gosling. Ryan Gosling comes into this film based off the old TV show from the early 1980s, which only I seem to remember because, yes, I am that old. So I ask you, this is not the Lee Majors that we once knew. This is Ryan Gosling coming in at the peak of Ryan Gosling powers. I mean, he's coming off the success of Barbie. He's built up success after success, both critically and as a popular format, as a popular leading man. He's probably can get no higher than what he is right now. Your thoughts about what The Fall Guy could achieve? It's gotten relatively positive reviews heading into that this coming week. So your thoughts on what The Fall Guy will do as a replacement for whatever Marvel movie would be there normally in the first weekend of May.
Haven't we seen this movie already? It was Driver. He was the same thing, right? He was a stunt person.
Not the same thing. He was loosely. Yeah, he was. He did a little stunt driving.
I feel like he was the same character. But I like Ryan Gosling, and I like. Okay.
You are correct. I stand corrected. You are correct.
Yeah, because I was like, this the premise of this film sounds very familiar to me.
But he's more of a stunt man. There he was a stunt driver specifically. He's a full stunt man. He jumps off the tall buildings.
Because
he's the unknown stunt man that makes Clint Eastwood look like a star. Okay, sorry. That's the old theme song from the Lee Majors Show. But anyways, yeah, he does the whole, you see him jump off of stuff in the trailers and all that. So he does more than just driving and crashing. So in this film,
I think, I mean, it's an action comedy. Like I'm drama.
Yeah, it is. It is
everything in there. I think it could be a fun ride.
Okay. But how well do you think it will do? Remember this, we're talking about the peak of Ryan Gosling powers. And this is normally one of the biggest weekends of the year for the box office. So I want to hear what your thoughts on how well it could, how much money do you think it could generate?
That's a tough question because there's a lot of movies that have the same kind of, action comedy feel to it that have not, surpassed $300 million in the box office. So maybe this one will come in right around 300 or 400, but I don't think that it's going to breach that 500 mark. And I don't know how much it costs to make, but I don't think that we're yet in a place in the movie theaters where a movie like this can climb to the upper echelons of box office numbers.
Okay. Well, again, it is Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in The Fall Guy. Loosely related to the old Lee Majors television show, where a stuntman gets involved as far as a criminal investigation, he puts into the hands himself, and obviously that leads to various hijinks. I'm just curious because it's kind of interesting to see how it will parody Hollywood filmmaking as a whole, to see how well it does that. What looks real, what looks not, what is it intentionally going to look like there's CG involved as far as green screening? Is there not, I've already seen some scenes where it looks like it was done in front of a green screen, and I don't know if that's intentional to parody Hollywood or if it's actually a scene that's meant to be real, quote unquote. So again, I'm curious to see how well it performs. I think Ryan Gosling's name, as far as powering a movie is probably as bankable as anyone's out there right now. Sorry, Blade Runner 2049. But anyways, getting back to that, is I think now he is coming off of the success of Barbie, and I think it will probably, I'm going to say it's going to do a little more. I'm saying it's going to go over $500 million. I think it's going to go over half.
Wow. All right.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say the power of Gosling will drive.
All right. Hey, well, we'll see. We're going to devote a segment each show just to tracking the numbers of this movie, and we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Yes. But it is the Fall Guy. And I think also the fact it is on the traditional one of the three or four biggest weekends of the year, which is, you know, it's supposed to be, if the Fall Guy essentially kicks off the summer movie season. So we'll see exactly if people are getting into the Fall Guy and how far it goes. But your thoughts on some of the movies that are coming up in May, my friend, including the movie coming up right after it the next week in, of course, Planet of the Apes. So I want to hear your thoughts, my friend, on what's coming up with May, the movies in May. Because I know, again, there is no Marvel movie for, you know, because always when a Marvel movie would show up, there, remember how other movies would just like get out of its way and change right. their, yeah, right. There is no Marvel movie to get out of the way. I despite my thoughts on a possible success for this movie in the Fall Guy, I do think that you can compete against it. And in doing so, I think that there are movies out there that can do well. And no, I'm sorry, Tarot is not going to be one of them. Sorry, horror fans. It's funny how there's a horror movie of the week coming up each and every week now. Because they're so quick and easy to make as far and cheap to make still, comparatively speaking. But with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes coming up on the 10th, and also if the Imaginary Friends movie coming up with Ryan Reynolds, John Krasinski, and Steve Carell, that's coming up on the 17th, and then you close out your month with the Memorial Day weekend with Furiosa and the Garfield movie. So your thoughts, my friend. I don't see any film that's like going to go bonkers, but I think that the Fall Guy will get a run for its money, quite literally, in May from some of these other films.
I don't know, man. I think Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is going to be the winner for the month here.
You go, all right. That's a good pick.
Either that or Furiosa, because I remember Mad Max did pretty well in the box office too. So I'm predicting one of those two. I think Imaginary Friend is going to be good, but I think it's going to be one of those movies that it's not going to appeal to the wider audience. It's going to be something that's like a kid's movie, you know, like it's not going to be something that teenagers are going to be like, yeah, let's go see Imaginary Friend. I don't think it's going to have that type of appeal, but I'm thinking Kingdom of Planet of the Apes is a safe bet. It's always a fun time, a good popcorn flick, good thing to take your older kids to, a good family night movie. And Furiosa is going to be one of those like art house films that people are going to be like, yeah, and we're going to talk about this for a while. So I'm predicting one of those two is going to win May.
So you're saying the 65-year anniversary, the re-release of North by Northwest, is it going to pull it out at the box office over these other pictures? As how great a movie it is, and on my top 25, which you can read on popculturecosmos.wordpress.com.
I remember that, yeah. I mean, obviously it's going to cross $1 billion, but let's carve room for the lesser beings before this greater god of a film.
Okay, I just had to go ahead and write up a synopsis because we are catching up finally on our top 100 ish movies of all time, and I just had to recently write on it. It was kind of heartwarming again to relive something with North by Northwest, and last time it was released out in theaters, I got the chance to watch it, so I thought that was very special. So maybe I'll get a chance to see it again, but we'll see. But once again, it is the movies of May. What are your thoughts on who might take the prize as the biggest movie in May? Will it be The Fall Guy? Will it be Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes? My gosh, how many derivatives of Planet of the Apes do they have left? Supermarket of the Planet of the Apes. I don't know. Shopping Mall of the Planet of the Apes. I don't know.
Next one's going to be Pandemic of the Planet. Well, I guess the Planet of the Apes kind of started from a pandemic anyway. Yeah. So I guess that's
Yep. Furiosa, Mad Max Saga, the Garfield movie, or if any of those movies, which one will be is your favorite? Which one is your favorite to go ahead and get the title of biggest movie in the month of May? Please let us know your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
If you're tired of sifting through flea markets for rare and unique games, we can help. Retro City Games in Henderson, Nevada, only 5 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, has all your favorite gaming staples, classics, and a wide selection of rare games with new stuff always appearing on our shelves. Come in and chat with Nicole or Doug about your love of games and watch as they help you complete your collection or find your childhood favorite. And don't forget, Retro City Games loves trade-ins. So if you have any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, Xbox, PlayStation, or even PC games, come in and visit Retro City Games today. Welcome to the new metropolis of gaming, Retro City Games.
But my friend, it's been a great episode. But before we head on out, we got about 15 minutes left. It is time to face the franchise. And you left it in surprise for me. And a brilliant surprise it is, because you have chosen what as our facing the franchise today?
I have chosen Mass Effect. So obviously there's no new Mass Effect on the horizon. I mean, we're supposed to get a new game out of what? It'll probably be 3 or 4 years from now, I'm sure, if we're lucky. Yes. Same thing with Dragon Age. But anyways, I got thinking about this because we keep talking about it, and then someone stopped by the my booth today and was talking and giving me this whole like history of Elder Scrolls lore, and they're talking about Dragon Age and Mass Effect and BioWare and all that. So I want to talk about this because there have been rumors floating around, especially they're starting to ramp up again, especially with the success of Fallout on Amazon. If I remember correctly, it was Amazon Studios that was rumored to be producing said Mass Effect show. So
I remember we had circled. Okay, this was right in the time when Henry Cavill was reading a possible transcript for a synopsis of Mass Effect. I read a Deadline report that Amazon was circling around Mass Effect. Once again, I think Legendary had the rights to it at one point in time during the last decade, but now I guess it's, you know, the Legendary let it go because after what happened with Andromeda, that, you know, they kind of just like, everybody's like, I don't want Mass Effect. But then people have started to become warm up to Mass Effect again. But yeah, nobody's committed to it as of yet. So there's not been a confirmation of, with all the television and film productions, adaptations of video game properties, mm-hmm. we have yet to see a Mass Effect as of yet. And to me, it's criminal. Absolutely criminal.
It absolutely is criminal. And I know too, you know, like I was saying, there people are starting to talk about it again on the internet. Like a lot of there's Reddit boards and you know, opinion articles being written about you know, what's going on with this Mass Effect show after the success of Fallout. So I'm really hopeful that we're going to get, you know, get this show sooner rather than later. But you know, I want to go back to the Mass Effect games as they were. And first, I want to ask you, when did you first play Mass Effect?
This goes back to when I was a video game store manager. And I used to like to go ahead and burn on DVD my own list of trailers and put like hours of footage and gameplay of stuff. That really would help, I think, get a lot of pre-orders, because we lived back in the day, you and I, when pre-orders were a way of life. You really had to go ahead and get those pre-orders in, and showing a ton of video of upcoming games was really one way to do it in the store. Oh yeah, what's that game? Oh, so I got a hold of a lot of footage, and I saw it from the get-go, from the E3 announcement. I think it was 2006, if I'm not mistaken, when Casey Hudson announced it, and I was just like, I just popped in from the get-go. And the thing was, they did such a good job of hyping this up. Then they made, in the days upcoming before the game came out, they made an hour special. They treat it as a big deal. And in the best year ever for video games in 2007, and how influential many of those games are, Mass Effect came on the scene, and it was just something that people were knocked off their socks by. Just the fact that the story was so compelling and that actually put them involved and invested into it. Mind you, some of the mechanics needed to be worked on, which it was in later iterations in Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3. But just the fact that that point in time, and you know, there were some sequences where, you know, like you're too much in the Mako. You can nitpick all you wanted as far as the game is concerned, but the overall experience at that time, people were playing it dozens and dozens of hours long, exploring the galaxy and saying, this is the exact space saga that I wanted, because it has a compelling beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I played Mass Effect on, I think it was the week it released, Brank from Super BS. You've been talking about it a lot. And so like I went and picked up a copy of it, and I remember sitting there playing it, and I'm like, gosh, I hate this game, because I'm like going to all these different planets, and I end up on the one where there's like sandworms that come out and like eat your car. And I'm like, I hate this. So like I put it down, and it took me 2 years to go back to it, because Big Dog kept going, Dog, you gotta play this game, man. You gotta play this game. It's amazing. And then, you know, hype was building up for Mass Effect 2. And I was like, all right, fine. I'll start it over. So I started over, and I didn't go to that planet from before. And I remember like exploring the Citadel and just getting like a feel for the lore of the world and doing the first couple missions. I was like, oh, come on. I really love this game. You know, that was it for me. And from that point forward, I guess I just didn't give it a good shot, or sorry, a fair chance. But from that point forward, like I was a Mass Effect fan. And I remember when Mass Effect 2 came out, a lot of people were equating it to the Matrix Reloaded. Like it was one of those things where they weren't quite sure where it was going to go, but the sequel didn't feel as good as the original. And I didn't think that. I thought that it was actually a really well put together game. What are your thoughts on number two?
Number two is considered one of the best video games of all time. And I think because of the fact that it started with one, the choice system, and also the ramifications of that. It's one of the really the first games, number one, and then number two expanded upon it greatly, where the decision of choice and the ultimate outcomes of your choice were treated with respect. Like if you made decisions that wanted you to make you a bad guy, yet you're still going to have to save the galaxy, but made you a bad guy along the way, everybody would then start to treat you as a bad guy. If you wanted to be treated as, or thought of as a good guy and do ultimately the hero thing to do the entire way, you're treated as such. If you wanted to go somewhere in the middle, it would treat you as such. That choice system was revolutionized. There was some dialogue systems in the past before in previous games, but Mass Effect 1 and then Mass Effect 2 upon it, as far as being able to make the decisions you have and the ramifications of it, obviously really were perpetuated in the Mass Effect series. And the fact Mass Effect 2, I think, is the height, or considered by many the height of the Mass Effect series, because the fact of, you know, you choose which shipmates you can have and have not, you know, decisions that you made, interactions with them. You got to say the right things to the right individuals at the right time in order for them to want to go ahead and be by your side when it comes to the major battle. I think that just those decisions that they put in your hands, as opposed to just rudimentary, you know, just clicking left or right on the controller, it made you think, Josh. It made you think about the type of adventure you truly wanted.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I think that where one introduced some good systems as far as like character development and choices being made and, you know, how close you would get to these characters, I think Mass Effect 2 fully fleshed that out in just how interesting some of the side characters were, you know, with, you had Miranda, I think that was her name, right? Miranda.
Yes.
And you had, you know, Rex was back. I always like, you know, Liara was always a cool character. But sorry, I don't even remember. You had the assassin, and you had, there's a couple other characters.
Thane, you had a group of characters that everybody absolutely loved. Yes.
Yeah, and I actually, by the time that game was over, like, I wanted so badly to go and, you know, help them with those loyalty missions. Like, I remember playing the game several times trying to find the ending where nobody died.
Garrus, Liara, Tally, I mean, yep. Ashley, Caden, you know, people know these characters even to this day. And yep. Yeah, I agree with you. agree with you, my friend.
Right. So I thought that it was a spectacular game. Mass Effect 3 is where we get into like iffy territory. I know it's such a divisive.
It was really good until the ending where they couldn't figure things out.
Yeah, well, they were trying to be clever, I think, with the ending. So they're like, oh, it's just a killer.
It was very controversial at the time what they did with the ending, giving you those standard endings and that nobody was happy with. They petitioned. It's one of really the first online petitions that really worked to an extent that BioWare and EA had to create an alternative ending to make, you know, to placate, I guess, the hate internet hate that was on at that time for it. But people don't understand that the if you play Mass Effect 3 through 80 to 85% of the game is exactly the way you want it, as far as elements of RPG and the gunplay really blending and working together. It's how it ended up that was really the problem. But again, you know, it's something where this series, even that, even the failure of Mass Effect Andromeda, doesn't deter me and doesn't deter most Mass Effect fans for what hopefully will be a special outing coming up here whenever they decide to go ahead and do the Mass Effect game. But I'm also hoping, like you said, that it is ripe for, in this environment, Josh, for a Mass Effect television series or movie series. And I'm just at a loss to explain, other than the fact that I think any studio knows it's going to cost a whole load of money.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. It's going to be, but I honestly feel like the returns could be astronomical for that. Like, imagine how many people are going to be either subscribing to Amazon Prime or buying the episodes when they hit this, the, you know, hit Prime, hit Amazon or whatever of this show, especially if it becomes canon and it's tied in with that universe. So I think it would be an investment that would be well worth it. But before we sign off here, you know, Andromeda, obviously there were parts of Andromeda that I enjoyed. I mean, the story kind of started and then it went nowhere, but there are things I enjoyed, like as far as exploration goes, and I liked the concept of it, but it just was not executed well. And everything about it was kind of trashy. So, and I think that that's because BioWare or EA put all of BioWare's people on Battlefront, and then I think they disintegrate, not just, or reduced BioWare staffing, and it just all kinds of internal problems there. But because of that, do you think that another mass of people will be willing to approach another Mass Effect game in the future, like whatever comes out next?
I think so. I think they're going to give it another. I think enough time has gone by from Andromeda. I think the bad taste in Andromeda's, you know, that you, people had from Andromeda's mouth and all the stuff. I mean, I even wrote about it. You're archiving it. You probably saw my article that I wrote about how the problems and the issues of it and how unfinished it was and what a bad release it was. I think enough time has gone by that people are excited once again for Mass Effect. And again, if they can get their Hollywood off its butt to go ahead and realize what a great property this could be, hopefully they can time a series along with it whenever it decides to come out on EA.
Yeah. And I mean, if they were able to tie them together, I think that that would be, that'd be fantastic. That would be give people an excuse to go back and explore some of the lore being discussed in the show. But we'll just keep our fingers crossed until then. But I mean, I think that when we talk about cultural footprints, I think that Mass Effect has definitely left a footprint in gaming that, you know, it won't fade for many, many, many years.
What are your thoughts out there on Mass Effect, the upcoming game, and also as a property for television and movies? You know, we'd always talk about it, but we always want to, because we love it so much. Do you have the same thoughts on Mass Effect? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. Well, my friend, it's been a great episode. Any last thoughts before we head on out?
So the Knights are in the opposite spot as the Kings. They're up 2-1, whereas the Kings are down 2-1. So we'll see what happens. I keep imagining a world where the Kings can duke it out with the Knights.
We'll see what happens in the NHL playoffs. NBA playoffs we cover on the Lakers Fast Break, and definitely looking forward to seeing what Josh and I can talk about all the time in the NHL right here on the Pop Culture Cosmos. So for Josh Peterson, this is Gerald Glassford. It's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the Pop Culture Cosmos. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great day.